You got any kayaks?
You gotta be out of your fucking mind. Kayaks?
I could use kayaks.
Stanley, what the fuck do kayaks have to do with knives?
Never mind.
You fucking asshole. Kayaks you're asking me about when I'm asking you about knives?
Yeah, I understand, sir. Thank you for coming in.
How about you get some kayaks and stick them up your fucking ass, you moron?
Your stopwatch.
This is Revenge of the 90s. We are back. Fabs and I are back from our time travel, time vortex that we took to 2001 when we went to see The Mummy Returns, but left conveniently before we could warn anybody about 9/11. We just peaced out of 2001. So sorry about that. We did forget to do anything about 9/11. We were too jacked up about Mummy Returns. But we are back in the 90s, and we are talking today about 1996's The Fan, because it's baseball season. And also, we love when Robert De Niro plays a psycho. So
there's totally some like people who are like, that's fucking bullshit. They can just choose when to move to a different decade whenever they fucking want. What's the fucking point of this podcast?
Way to fuck with the continuity. It'll be like somebody's like, there's like a message board somewhere where like, that's fucking canon now.
Way to jump the shark 130 episodes in.
I hope if you are somebody that invested, please reach out.
Yes.
And yell at
Tell us.
I would,
you're,
I would
mad
love
you are
that. So, but hey, look, we're back. Okay. God, you can fucking rest for a second. Your crusade was successful. We're back in the 90s. We're not doing it anytime soon. But we are talking about The Fan, and we brought our good buddy back, who is our co-host on the California Penal League podcast. So that by default means he's got to be a part of every baseball episode because he's our resident baseball expert, and
it's written into the contract.
It is, yep. Yeah, it's written in.
Got a good agent,
and so Chris is back. Chris Slocum's with us, and he's becoming quite a recurring guest for us. He's hopped on quite a few different things, and he's very excited to talk about The Fan. I believe.
Oh,
I would have to assume.
I am so stoked. This was a movie that I was aware of to some degree, never had seen before you guys asked me to hop on the podcast. So I watched it last night. And
what a trip.
Boy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, drop your cock and grab your socks, gentlemen, because we're doing this movie.
Because fear strikes soon.
Oh, baby.
It's the tagline from the movie, guys.
Yeah. Well, this is like a little bit. I like it because it's just Robert De Niro doing the King of Comedy as a baseball movie.
Yes,
with like a
absolutely.
Little with like a little flair of Cape Fear, just like a tad of like, well, I already know he's a psycho. And I had never seen this before. This Tony Scott directed film, and it's got Tony Scott's fingerprints all over it. But the thing I think I like most about this after finally seeing it is that it's a baseball movie that seemingly has no idea what baseball is and has no interest in finding out.
Well, it doesn't give a shit about baseball now.
No.
No. In my research post-movie, because I felt the same way watching it, and in my research post-movie, John Kruk, it might have been on IMDb in the trivia, and John Kruk played a vital role. Not only was he like an ancillary like character on the team, but he told Tony Scott like that would never happen in a baseball dugout, or like that's not like, right. And Tony Scott was just like, "Yeah, I don't care.
Shut the fuck up." Yeah, like, there was like
good drama.
The reference
hilarious.
That he John Kruk was like, hey, like, there would never be rows of books in a baseball dugout. And Tony Scott was like, shut the fuck up.
Yes, there would.
What the fuck do you know?
This definitely, it seems like it was it was basically you gave somebody pictures and explained baseball to them, and they weren't allowed to watch a baseball game. And then it's like, okay, now you're going to make a like crime thriller centered around baseball. And it's like, I got it.
And then I get it. Okay.
Yeah, this is what was, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not going to the fan for any like actual baseball stuff other than it being a device for Wesley Snipes and Robert De Niro to like interact.
Right. I noticed things were off the rails when Wesley Snipes' character and Benicio del Toro's very ambiguous, like, was he Asian? Was he like from Central or South America character?
Juan Primo.
When they collide, great name. When they collide in that opening day game, the angle of which it's filmed would lend me to have believed that Wesley Snipes was playing center field.
Yes. Yes.
And that Primo was playing right field. Not left field, as they had led me to believe up until that point in the movie.
Well,
and I know some people are probably like, I don't care, man.
I don't give a shit. Right.
But that really threw me for a loop.
That's easy thing to get right, though. Like
that's such an easy thing to get right.
Like an Air Bud baseball movie and Ed starring Matt LeBlanc get like the basic fundamentals of baseball correct.
There's also also a scene. I don't know if you noticed this too, but like clearly they didn't care much about the continuity, because there's a scene during one of the games where a Braves pitcher is pitching to a Rockies catcher.
Yes, that's when I realized that the movie didn't give a shit about continuity. Because I'll raise you one on the continuity aspect. Not to get into spoilers too much, because boy, that last 30 minutes. That last 30 minutes was, it was labeled as a drama and a thriller. Comedy could have been also labeled in there too.
Oh, you really have to suspend your disbelief.
Oh baby, I don't want to give it away just too much. That's a tease, but I'm sorry. You go, Steve.
No. Go ahead. I need to hear your thoughts.
So in the last scene at the stadium, exterior shots of Dodger Stadium. Very clearly, Dodger Stadium.
They play to San Francisco. Why would you need that?
No. And Rayburn, Wesley Snipes' character, plays for the San Francisco Giants. Okay, cool. Maybe they're playing the Dodgers. No. They're playing the San Diego Padres.
In Dodger Stadium.
In Dodger Stadium, and then it starts to rain.
Oh, yeah. Like a monsoon.
Biblical Tony rain. Scott, no one told him, hey, they don't play baseball in all weather.
Yeah.
Like at a certain point, like they paused the game.
Yes. They did pause the game, and they were trying to get through it.
Well, they kept going because
Steve Stone kept intercutting into that.
Well, they keep going like, oh my God, the ump's going to call the game and like all this kind of stuff. And then of course they play again because like, spoiler alert, Robert De Niro murders an umpire to like impersonate him. And he's like, we're fucking playing. We're playing. And it's still a downpour. And Wesley Snipes hits his like inside the park home run and is running through like straight up mud in the infield. like buckets of like mud.
Yeah.
My first sign that the baseball that they were like, oh, well, two, it all happens in that opening day scene when De Niro takes his son to opening day.
Yeah.
De Niro is Gil. He plays a knife salesman named Gil. Gil Renard. And he's a failure, right? He's a shitty knife salesman.
But it's his father's company.
Yeah, his dad makes great knives. He comes from a knife lineage.
Yes.
A very proud knife lineage.
And, you know, his father got kind of like squeezed out of the company, but Gil was still there and he's just hanging on by a thread because he's got a horrible temper and he's a really shitty salesman. And so he's
established very early that Gil is a terrible father and a terrible person. Like,
yes, all around. Yeah, there's no like, there's really like, it's not like King of Comedy where you feel like a little bit of empathy. Like right off the bat, you're like, this guy's a horrible monster, and you know something bad's going to happen. But he manages to take his son to opening day despite his ex-wife's best wishes. And very quickly, it's a really good scene, actually, like in the stands at least, where it's like his anger's like getting to him and his son's like clearly scared of him. There's like there's some good tension there. There's some really good tension there, but it really is hard to focus on that if you're anybody who's ever seen a baseball game. One, because there's an absurd amount of pennants in the stands where goddamn fan is waving a giant.
But it was opening day. It was opening day. There was pomp and circumstance.
They could have given those away as a thing.
Now, the one that really gets me is that in that opening day game, Bobby Rayburn, the new $40 million signing for the Giants. So $40 million at that point in 96, he's a darn good player. He's like a superstar probably.
But was it how much? It was $40 million over how many years? That was the one thing I never got clarification on, and that
That's a good question.
Kind of threw me for a loop there. It made watching.
I think they just assumed.
They brought it up a lot that he was making $40 million.
Yeah, there's $40 million. That's a good question. But the thing that really gets me is that so he like tweaks his like oblique, basically. Like he hurts his ribs or side or whatever in that opening day game. And what's hilarious is that at one point he's in the trainer's room and they're like going to give him a shot to like basically get him back out there, like a cortisone shot or whatever.
Right.
And like all the manager and all the players are there. And I'm like, oh, well, the game must be over. And then they're like, no, get back out there. And it was like, what do you mean?
It was like in the fourth inning.
There's no halftime in baseball.
No, not at all.
Well, he has to play for states because it's an 11 game season, and you know he can't miss anything.
It there was so much going on in that first game.
it was super chaotic, and I just Gil in that scene. I was so uncomfortable.
Oh yeah.
Like I had seen this movie before. So like I remember he was like pretty unhinged, but it is just like increasing because his whole thing is he's a shitty knife salesman, but he has like to meet with a big client, of course. And of course it overlaps with opening day. Mm-hmm. And you know, instead of you know, I get he's a diehard Giants fan, and he's gonna take his son to the game, but you know, he's gonna lose his job if he doesn't close this sale. And so his plan is, okay, cool. Like I'll meet you during the game. So he's going to be at Candlestick Park and he's going to drive into the Bay Area, which is like the worst traffic you've ever imagined, like worse than any city I've ever been in. And he's constantly checking his phone, his watch. He's getting really like revved up during it, like losing his mind. His son is just trying to like not get beaten by his father probably. And he does one of the craziest things I've legitimately ever seen in a like movie that is like a pretty normal movie, not a, you know, like a crazy genre film where like a sci-fi movie, obviously like an alien popping out of you, but that's crazier. But in a like normal movie, he just leaves his son at the game.
Yes.
To drive into San Francisco. Yeah. To sell some fucking knives,
which
misses that meeting.
misses the meeting because the guy is at the game.
The guy's at the fucking game, yes.
That made me sweat where I was like, I could, like, that was a really tense scene and probably like, and I'm sure that's how it was like constructed, but like, dude, that had my palms sweating. Like the thought of like if I would like put myself in that situation where I was like, I got an important meeting, like leave my son at the game and be like, just sit here in this seat until I get back. I got to go make a call.
Sit with 40,000 plus random strangers.
Well, Steve, it could have been the situation where the kid literally takes that seriously, like in sudden death. The building's collapsing and the kid's just sitting in the seat like, okay, yeah. Dad.
Like my dad said. Let's
move.
Yeah, that's right.
So here's the other thing, too. As I'm watching that and I'm feeling all those same feelings, I was like, man, this movie doesn't get made today. Or at least, like, this isn't a key plot point because a simple text or email, like, solves that problem.
Oh, yeah.
It was just hilarious that, like,
I would love a version of this movie today. Like, it could be so good with podcast hosts. You still have these crazy call-in shows that go on. Twitter. Like, this could be, you could do such a cool remake of The Fan.
I think you could. Actually, that's a really good idea. That's a good idea from the standpoint of, like, I actually... Of course, yet another thing that I was like blown away by is, so Ellen Barkin plays like this like local sports talk show host. She's
Foxy. Smoking hot.
Yeah. So she's quite good at her job in the sense that she is able to, you know, she seems like she's got like a real in with the team. You know, she gets the players to interview. So she's, you know, Ellen Barkin's very good at her job. Jewel. But it must also be noted she is smoking hot. So yeah. she's a total package in this. And I did find it hilarious that, I mean, the sports talk stuff is like really like goofy. Like it's really poorly written. Like it's like, that's not how anybody talks in sports talk radio.
Yes. It was way hipper than like any sport. Usually it's like, I got Al from White Plains. The fucking Jets. Are you kidding me?
It's like, what? And it's always just like, it's a host that's never as articulate as Ellen Barkin. It's always like,
no.
Hammer and the hot dog. And it's just like, you know. And like, you know, they're breathing heavily into the mic just as much as the callers. So it's like, you know, they're feeding off
Boston,
each other.
Yeah, the Boston guys, like, you think blacks can play in today's NBA? I don't know.
So, you know, it's like a real breath of fresh air to get Ellen Barkin. But like, the thing I love about her show is that she's like she's doing the show from the games. In the press box.
Yeah.
It's like, and look, you know, I don't think I've ever seen that one before, but I actually thought that would be a really cool idea if a team like brought in like a podcast to record live during games.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I think that would be very fun. Or if they had like a party booth where like, because they used, that's in Cleveland, Chris, you know, WTAM used to call it the party booth or whatever when they would record after games. What if you did it during the game on like a separate feed?
That'd be that'd be like a radio version of the Manning cast.
It'd be really fun to do that.
And I think a lot of people would dig it. Like there was like, I mean, with the radio aspect of it in the movie, I was like, I thought they did a good enough job of kind of like, showing that world and making it a device to move the movie along because there were some points that it helped obviously in the movie. But you're right. Like it was a little campy. Well, maybe it was a lot campy. But
I mean, I thought it was campy and fun and ridiculous, but it was like so ridiculous to the point where it's like, hey, we got the star of the Giants on. He's just going to talk to random people. Random fans are going to call in.
Yeah.
And then Gil's like, hey, fuck Primo. I'm so glad I cut him with my fucking knives.
Oh,
like,
spoilers. What? Spoilers.
Well, I like, isn't that what, like, that's what drives him to kill Juan Primo? Because
because he says something on the radio to him.
He does. And like,
yes.
So the story is that Bobby Rayburn is number 11 and he wants to buy it. He wants that number when he gets to the Giants, but Juan Primo has 11. So he's got to be 33, but 11 is his lucky number. And that's why he thinks he's like having a bad start at the plate. And so he's trying to buy this number off of Primo and he won't budge. And so you're right in that random ass, like interview segment where he's just talking to fans on the radio. He's like, maybe I should have you talk to Primo for me when Gil calls in.
But,
and Gil's like,
but doesn't,
maybe
and
the, I
but
will.
That's right after a scene at the strip club where he's in the stall and Rayburn Primo get into an altercation in the bathroom, and John Kruk and the boys have to break it up.
Well, and that's where Gil leads him in that question where he's like, he kind of like, he says it's like bullshit that he won't give him the number or something.
Yeah.
And yeah. So then Bobby says, yeah, maybe you should talk to Primo for me or something like that. And Bobby's like, oh, or Gil's like, okay. And meets him at the sauna where he knifes him and somehow walks out without anyone.
No one sees it.
Well, there weren't many people in the pool.
You know, I mean.
I like that he goes to the hotel for a sauna instead of like the team facility.
Well, this was also the 90s. This was also the 90s, you know, and Candlestick Park probably didn't have the amenities, you know, so.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point.
But like, there's a lot in this movie that like a simple cell phone solves the problem with the client. You know, player doesn't die at the sauna at the hotel because teams now have those facilities on site. Like,
well, also, Gil has a cell phone because he calls in while he's driving a bunch of
car phones. Car phone, yeah.
Like, he calls in a ton of times. So, like, he could very easily just be like, hey, is Mr. whatever the client's name, is he still there?
Yeah, I don't know why he didn't. O'clock? That's a good point. Why didn't he just call from his car?
Or
Gil was not a phone.
Gil wasn't a great salesman. Gil was unhinged.
Yes, yeah. It makes it very easy to know why Gil was getting his ass fired.
Yeah.
Like, it's not any mystery, you know?
Yeah, so, that's fair.
But yeah, so he does kill Juan Primo, and that sort of sets into motion, like, where he starts to go off the deep end, because, like, he loves Bobby Rayburn so much that he's willing to kill for him. And then when Bobby Rayburn doesn't show enough, gratitude, that's where things start to go off the rails collectively. So I did like too when like Primo gets murdered and they do like that super melodramatic tribute to him before the game. I like that during that game, that's like the first time I think Bobby Rayburn like breaks out of his slump.
Mm-hmm. And because he's wearing number 11 on his jersey patch.
And he gets a hit, and the crowd boos him. And I'm like, why would they
go back to Atlanta? Like,
why would they boo him? Like, he gets a hit. Why would you boo him? And then, then the announcer gets on the PA and is like, please refrain from excessive noise. And it's like at that point, I was like, I gotta detach myself because I can't like think of this as a real baseball movie.
Yeah, Tony Scott's like, they'd probably say something, right? Like, if people were being too loud at the game, right? They'd have an announcement, I would assume. Yeah, they'd have an announcement. Yeah, we'll just have the announcement. And the baseball guy is like, no, they wouldn't.
That's the most British. It's truly the most, like, British thing I could imagine, is that, like, this British director was like, I think that somebody would come on and ask people to calm down.
In a
sporting event.
Ruckus has no place at the baseball game.
No, absolutely not. So we're at the point where, you know, okay, Bobby is losing it. He had an apartment that he was throwing knives through the wall, and
but it was more of like a seedy motel, I feel.
Yeah, maybe a seedy motel, and then he seemed to have like another like. Didn't he have like another sort of like place where he was hanging those batting helmets like they were skulls from the ceiling?
Yes, that was at the youth baseball field, like three levels down into the ground.
In his underground bunker.
Like, because spoiler alert, the cops have to raid it later in the movie. And it's like, it is like flights of stairs down. And I'm like, this is like a high school baseball or like little league baseball field that they're at, that's got some like kind of crazy storage system just built into the ground.
Yeah. That's where you, you figure that might've been built during like the '50s, that little league field. And they were like, well, in case the Russians nuke us, get
this
everybody.
Is true. Get exactly. That's you know,
a very good point.
This is a good point. Yeah.
So maybe the bunker's there for a reason, but it does.
I'm sure there's fields that have that.
like also throughout, just in case like you weren't getting the memo on Gil's like insanity, he's always like making references to like when he played baseball, like Little League baseball.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh God, dude, you're
but you don't 50s. Know that until you don't well, know that until
yeah,
the,
yeah, I was gonna say
the end.
Oh, you're right. That's the reveal.
The like, reveals in that is, third act. Yeah.
Yeah, this is my buddy Coop. He was my Little League catcher, and you're like, yeah. Oh no. Oh,
shit. Manages- like, you almost I will say the movie, like you almost buy it for a second when he like when he like says that, like, you know, he had like a cup of coffee. You're almost like, well. But he also calls himself some other name to
trick to him. Yeah,
Bobby. He tricks him. So
yeah, because if he Curly, says he's right? Gil, he's literally Gil's called in every single time Bobby's on the radio. So like he can't be like, I'm Gil, your super fan from the radio. He's like, oh you're a danger then.
Right.
Well, because... no, that goes back to the kind of the start of that third act. When he's at Bobby's beachfront property and Bobby's son gets attacked, presumably by a shark?
No, I think he just like falls off his waterboard.
Thing, he's like nearly drowns.
He almost drowns, but I thought something like dragged him in. I don't know.
I think the dog knocks him off.
Maybe the dog. Okay, maybe it was the dog.
Yeah.
But then he jumps into the ocean, saves him, and then that's when he introduces himself to Bobby as Curly or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And so
that kind of starts that.
Yeah, he's like
final act.
Right. So he's on like he's at like his beachfront house where he's been spying on the family. And so he seizes his opportunity. And that's when they actually meet face to face for the first time.
Yes.
So Bobby's never seen him before, but has kind of, because Gil's always like hanging around after games and stuff.
Well,
and
Gil travels to like after after he gets fired, he I don't know if they decided to try to have this be the narrative, but like it looked like he traveled to like Colorado and like San Diego and to LA to watch some of these other games.
Yeah, they don't make it like really that clear. Yeah, I don't think they really give a shit. They don't really care. So they're just like, I don't know. Watch some games. Don't worry about
out the window. Five minutes. Don't worry about this movie. So
if you're Bobby, if you're Wesley Snipes' character, when are you like calling the police? Like,
so
are you okay? Are you inviting this person who's soaking wet into your house after saving your son?
So yes, I would.
I totally would.
Now, very quickly though, when they're in his kitchen and he's like talking to, he like gives him a beer and they're talking about baseball and like Gil's playing coy, like he doesn't know who Bobby is, and he's like, you know, you play baseball. He's like, you Barry Bonds, and Bobby laughs, and they start talking a little bit more. But then like Gil has this comment where he's like, you fucking baseball players, like you don't understand how good you have it, and like he kind of gets a little dark, and like Bobby's just like, oh yeah, I guess you're right, and that's when I'd be like, ah, this guy's a little funky. I don't really know.
Right.
Like what's going on here? That would be my first sign of danger.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would definitely be a first sign. But when they go out to the beach and Bobby's throwing him his fastball or showing him his fastball and like it's like chin music. And he's whole spiel that he's going on, like I'd be like, I mean, and to the credit, like he kind of does like, hey, you know, let's get the dog inside. Let's pick up the baseballs and the bat and head on inside. Like, tonight's over.
And I think, you know, obviously, you're Wesley Snipes' character. Like, you're super fit pro athlete. So you're like, I can take this guy in a normal fight. So, like...
And he also did save my son still.
Yeah,
I'll be polite. Maybe he's just a weirdo. I mean, honestly, though, like, I'm not even doing the game of catch. Like, he comes out. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's some clothes. And he picks my baseball uniform. Like, yeah, that's his clothes. And he's like, comes out with that. I'm like, cool.
Well, no, he had the jacket over top of it. So he could have, like, theoretically had the jacket over top of it, been like, peace out, man. Thanks for saving my kid. Catch you sometime later.
Yes, but when he displays it.
But yeah,
I'm when like, he displays it, I'm like, cool, yeah. I'll sign that for you. We're actually got to get up early, but yeah. like, how about like I have you to the game? Like I would just do anything to get him out of the house.
Yes.
Like, I'll get you a suite, like whatever you want. Like I want to introduce you to the other players and show them your fastball you're telling me about. Just be like you can throw batting practice. You want to throw batting practice? Then it's, you can show me your fastball at the park. Wouldn't that be neat?
I just in front anything, of other get the fuck out of witnesses. My house. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and during the day with security.
Yeah. That would be, when he takes off the jacket, I actually like for most of that interaction, like the entire time, Bobby never seems to let on. Like even when he picks up everything and goes to the house, it sure doesn't seem like Bobby's bothered at all by Gil.
Right.
At any point.
At the very end, I felt like he was kind of like,
I think he got freaked out by the end.
He's like, what about the mitt? And he's like, oh no, keep it, man. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like yelling back down to the beach. That's when I kind of picked up where he was like, there might have been like a tinge of.
Okay, can I ask a question that's like a non-dark? So what would be, obviously, like, I'm going to save somebody's life. I know you two would, just like out of the kindness of your heart. But like, what would be, like, let's say you save, I don't think Aaron Judge has a kid, but like, let's say you save Aaron Judge's kids, like, or girlfriend, or his life. Mm-hmm. What would be like back of your mind, like expectation? Like, what do you like? What do you think? Or, I mean, I don't. Obviously, you don't need to be evenly compensated or anything like that. But like, I would expect probably like at least like some autograph stuff. I wouldn't ask for it, but I would be like, I just saved your life. Like, big fan of yours, and to like be like, I know who you are. Like. So I would hope to get that at least.
I would see how high up a job in the Yankees front office he could get me.
Oh, that's a great call.
What if it's Bat Boy?
I'd be like, you're going to make me the assistant GM.
But what if he's like...
George? I want the George Costanza job.
Yeah, I want the assistant to the traveling secretary.
Yeah, yes. What if he's like... I talked to Hank Steinbrenner, and best we can do is visiting team Bat Boy.
I've been a Bat Boy. I actually know that life.
I know.
So I've already been that.
But would you do it again? Would you do it
at the major league level?
I need to be a job that supplements
in New York.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would need to supplement my income if I'm going to like accept a job. I think that's a great avenue. Like to see, just kind of lay it on, or you know, even just maybe a friendship. That's cool.
Just give me your number. Just give me your number.
Yeah,
like I would actually. That's actually what I, dude. Actually, that would be like maybe an autographed ball because I like to collect those, or like an autographed like rookie card.
Because I was gonna say rookie card. Give me like an autographed rookie card for starters.
I would do that, but I would also be like, give me your number, and then like. We'll be buddies, and like I'll be chill about it. But like, strike up a friendship with him.
I'm not gonna let my friends know.
Yeah,
like that. I have your number. I'm not gonna be weird about it. Like, but you know, we can get like dinner, and you know, play some games, like video games, and just like whatever. If you need to, you know, complain about Giancarlo Stanton, like I get it.
His busted like, ass fine. Legs. Yeah,
yeah. Gio Ursula, fuck that guy.
Now,
right.
I have one. I have a question.
There you go.
Yeah, I have a question because he's gone.
Same vein, but you saved Justin Verlander's life. Do you ask for a kiss from his wife?
A kiss from his wife?
Her boobs.
Yeah. Do you ask dude, for Kate Upton?
You know what the funny thing is though. Like the funny thing though is like if I even saw Kate Upton in person, I think I'd fucking just pass out. I'd piss my pants and pass out. It's like I'd be like, could I meet your wife? And he'd be like, yeah, sure. She's over here.
Man, like from
and
a
I would just like I just piss my pants and they wait. I'd be like waking up on their couch like 6 hours later. That's like no human being like the thing is like human beings aren't meant to see such beauty and it's like I couldn't. It's like looking directly at the sun.
It is. But yeah, I think you're right with the autograph card.
Yeah, you know. I think that's a good route. I would just talk to Kate Upton about the other the whatever that movie was, The Switch or the other one. The other
woman. The other woman.
The other,
yeah. With Leslie Mann and Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
And then one girl from Grey's Anatomy.
Was that fun? Nicki
Minaj was in
there. Give me some on-set stories.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So, Gil takes, I think, great offense to not getting a thank you.
Oh, Gil takes... offense is putting it mildly, Steve.
Yeah, like, yeah. Well, I said great offense. Like, is that... Does great offense qualify?
I think he went above and beyond great offense.
Yes, he does kidnap Bobby's son. So
kidnaps his son and steals his car.
Yes, steals his car. And this is all so that Gil can get a thank you, essentially.
Yeah,
yeah. For
pretty much for killing Primo.
For killing Juan Primo. Doesn't really care about saving his son's life. It's about I got you your number back, yeah. Basically. And I don't know
what he's expecting though. Like, how is he? How does he know that? How would he know? Like, oh, thanks for killing Juan Primo for me.
That's true. Exactly.
Like earlier,
and also actually, that's a really good point. That's a really good point in that it's weird that this movie never has a moment where Gil tells Bobby to his face mm-hmm. that he killed Juan Primo. That's weird because that would be a really cool reveal. That would be a really cool reveal. Like if he were to say that and then like all of a sudden at the house, like Bobby's really scared where he's like, oh fuck.
Well, like, and also, except for the fact that Primo wouldn't sell the number, he seems to be a decent enough teammate. Like maybe they don't see eye to eye, but like Bobby probably doesn't want his teammate dead.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Bobby's like a total like diva dickhead, superstar player, and he doesn't really like give a shit about his teammates in their like cavernous, weird locker room that they're in. He doesn't talk to anybody. I cannot imagine that the Candlestick Park clubhouse looked like a fenced off dungeon, but
I can't. I can't.
Maybe it was, maybe. But here's a question for you since we're back on Juan Primo. What would you say Juan Primo's stats are and Bobby Rayburn's? And would you want any of them on your fictional? Would you draft any of them to your fictional baseball
roster? God.
So, what point in the season was that?
Well, like, I get you put it out over the course of the year, I guess. Not like up to
just
that
like point. Give me what you think like Juan Primo would do in a typical season.
This is like 90s steroid era. He's probably batting like 315.
Juan Primo's got
It wasn't 315 because Bobby hit 314, I thought, with the Braves.
Right. And that was a big deal.
And that was a huge deal. So I'm going to say probably like 280. Hit like
55 homers.
Probably. Yeah. 38 home runs, 150 RBIs.
Something like that. Yeah. That's Bobby stats for sure. Primo, up until like that like breakout season that he was having, was probably like a 240 hitter.
You think but so?
Something tells me he was probably
Primo was like a good player.
Well, but I thought there was like a point in the early, like they were like, oh my gosh, like he's really breaking out.
Yeah, maybe.
Or having like a great season. And like that led me to believe he was like an okay player. So maybe not 240, but like 260.
Okay. Like, I bet you he'd be like Juan like Primo probably home would have runs. Like, and probably like at that point in the time, like 45 stolen bases.
Yeah. But like that like, season that he was like in the midst of when he got murdered, he was probably hitting like 280, 290 with like 25 home runs.
I feel like he was having a real Luis Gonzalez type
season. Yes. Perfect. Perfect comp.
Okay. Bobby Rayburn would be a pretty damn good addition to any fictional like baseball roster.
Yeah.
We should probably do. We should probably put that together.
Oh, we should definitely do that. That'd be
a lot of fun.
And I have a question. Like after watching this movie, I was like, do Giants fans wear like Rayburn 33 jerseys? Like Guardians fans wear Vaughn 99 jerseys?
that would be such a deep cut,
but it'd be so odd. But like, Cubs fans wear like those like Henry Rowengarten jerseys.
Phil Brickma. Yeah.
Yeah. Like
Chet Stedman.
Stedman. Yes.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think I've ever seen one.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Oh, dude, people have these. Yes, that's the thing.
They do.
They sell Bobby Rayburn jerseys.
You'd have to imagine that would be the case. Glorious. Of course. A Primo jersey would be pretty cool. Oh,
give me a Benicio. That, by the way, it took me like 5 scenes to like realize that was Benicio del Toro.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's not really young like him. No, it doesn't. He's certainly changed and gotten older.
Dude, there's a company that does Juan Primo jerseys. They're $60 hand stitched.
Hand stitched.
$60.
That's on Primo.
That is a steal at twice the price.
That's not bad. Although I would do a Cubs. If they did like a Chet Stedman, dude, I would probably buy
I've seen Stedman jerseys.
Yeah. I've seen those too.
I've seen them out there.
Chet Stedman, dude. Oh, give me Chet Stedman starting any like big time playoff game. That's my dog. That's my junkyard dog right there.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Prime Chet Stedman for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about this earlier before we recorded about going out to the Bay Area to catch an A's and Giants game.
We should totally get Rayburn and Primo jerseys. I really kind
of like now want to buy one of these jerseys.
Oh no. When we do that, I'm going to wear a Juan Primo jersey.
I might get a Primo jersey. Like
100%.
I mean, $60 again. Steal it twice the price.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Rayburn, I don't know if I'd want Rayburn so much because like he's like kind of a shithead.
So, yeah, he's the reigning NL MVP, my friend.
You know what would be sweet though is if you got the Rayburn jersey and then you bought like an 11 patch and put it on the arm on the sleeve.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and like went full on art, like authentic.
Yeah, that'd be so awesome.
I will say, as much as I dislike Warriors fans, Bay Area fans are really good fans. Like I think the Giants are their number one team.
Yeah,
like every time I go up there, I always see people of Giants.
What about the Niners?
During football season, I'll see Niners stuff, but like any time of year, Giants hats all the time.
Yeah, they're great fans. I mean,
they might put somebody into a coma at a Dodgers
game. That's Dodger fans.
No, I thought it was
Giants, Dodger fans.
I thought it was Giants fans that jumped the Dodgers fan.
No, it was Dodger fans that jumped the Giants fan.
Okay.
All right, well.
I stand corrected.
All right, so this film's final act, as Chris alluded to, is pretty damn nuts.
Oh.
So not only first Gil kidnaps Bobby's son. What's his name? I can't remember.
Sean plays it really cool though. I gotta say, like for an 11-year-old, I would have been so freaked out.
Sean is super chill.
I'd be very scared that some random stranger that I just met is driving me around and said my dad was cool with it. But the weird thing is like this movie, because it's 1996, so of course they have to put like 9-inch nails and stuff. And all sorts of like grunge stuff, but like,
what was there was Nine Inch Nails, and then there was like the Rolling Stones. It was like that was like all that was like
a lot of Rolling Stones.
And then, but like the other thing before we dive into this last act, did you guys pick up on like how Bobby was like Gil was like, oh yeah, like when Mick recorded this song, like I was there, and it's like you weren't there when the Rolling Stones recorded that song, buddy. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's a pretty clear sign that this guy's like, completely unhinged.
That threw me off at first, and then I kind of picked up on it. I was like, oh, this guy's super unhinged.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a nice, easy sign. But I like that it's very strange. I don't like it, but it's very weird when he's with Sean, like, doing whatever. That like the song's playing like I wanna fuck you, taste you, feel you, like all this like weird shit, and it's like who chose this song for this sequence?
There's other Nine Inch Nails songs they could have used,
like, or just like any other song that you could choose other than this like man who kidnapped a kid and this song's playing while Sean's on
screen. That song kept playing every time he killed someone too.
very weird. It did not fit the vibe. That is one thing about this movie, is like you really have no clue. Like Tony Scott does some really interesting, fun stuff, but like you really don't, like the vibe and the like tone is like wildly fluctuating.
Oh yeah.
At any given time. And like it's really like hard to buy that like sequence when you meet Coop for the final first and final time, and like that's where you learn that like Coop was his like little league catcher,
because
he keeps talking about Coop like, hey Coop, my catcher.
Coop was a philosopher too, and
Coop used to tell me, you know, never get too down, and it's just like, oh wow, this minor league catcher you had must have been like pretty wise.
He was wise. Yeah. he was the wily vet.
And I like that Coop kind of goes, Coop's like, wow, you found me after like 25 years. And he's like, whose kid is that? And he's like, well, don't worry about it. And then he says, well, it's Bobby Rayburn's. And then he's like, okay, cool. I guess I'll just commit some crimes with you. And
the way I viewed that was he was going along with Gil.
Until he could get Sean out of there?
To save Sean, yes.
Yeah, I think he didn't want to incite him.
Yeah.
Because he probably thought it was crazy that he found him after 25 years. He's like, I haven't seen you since we were like
12.
Like 11 or 12 years old. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, I guess it's like weird. Like, they never even show it in his like face, though. That's what I thought was weird, is that like the character.
That's fair.
It was, yeah. No, it was.
Like he's just like, oh, okay. And it was just kind of like a weird turn where he suddenly lets the kid, like, clearly, yeah, you guys are right. But like, that was one of those things where it was like, I guess they couldn't be bothered to show any sort of like emotion on Coop's face. Not that it's a big deal, but like, there's this, they kind of rush everything at the end where it's just like, we got to get through this shit and show you the final scene. So,
yeah.
You know, whatever. So eventually, yeah, Coop tries to get Sean to escape, gets his head bashed in with a bat. And then now Gil has the ultimatum to friggin' Wesley Snipes, which is hit a home run in the game tonight or I'm going to kill your kid.
And then after the home run, you have to play the video that I've sent.
Oh yeah, and like
on the scoreboard.
Right, exactly. So show this video, and then like thank me personally in front of everybody after you hit a home run. I forgot about that part. Jesus Christ!
And then they go to Dodger Stadium, where the Dodgers are not playing, and it's the Giants and Padres.
Yep. Naturally,
And then one other point where it was evident that Tony Scott doesn't know anything about baseball was Bobby comes up to bat in the second inning and strikes out or something. And then his next plate appearance is in the eighth inning.
Yep.
What happened in that second at bat?
Like two at bats a game.
Two at bats. Like, no. My math would have indicated that even if this pitcher was throwing a no hitter, Bobby should have batted like the fifth inning.
Bobby would have
probably had two other at bats.
And like in that eighth inning, they try to intentionally walk him, don't they?
Yeah. And the catcher. And by the way, was that catcher the same catcher from Major League Two?
Oh,
It sounded like him. He never takes the mask off, and I never bothered to look it up on IMDb.
The one who can't throw the ball to second?
Yeah, Rube Baker.
Baker jersey would be really good for the Indians.
That would be.
Oh, yeah.
I've always wanted a Roger Dorn.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
That's what I've always wanted.
That could easily be done.
Oh, yeah.
But I like that Bobby, when he gets intentionally walked, but like two pitches in, he runs to the pitcher with his bat.
Well, after the rain delay.
After the rain delay, and like assaults the pitcher with his bat and like screams at him.
No, he just gets into his face. Did he assault him with the bat?
Well, he brings his bat with him and he like shoves it in his face.
He's like, he gets a strike, basically.
Yeah, and nobody stops any of it. No. It's like, okay, I get whatever.
So, Well,
but, and then the pitcher's like, okay. But
it makes sense why it wasn't stopped a few moments later.
Oh, that's true.
Mm.
That's true. So Bobby hits the home, well, hits the inside the Parker, and then all hell breaks loose because he's called out at the plate when he was like clearly safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's revealed that Gil is now the umpire because he killed the other umpire and took his friggin' outfit and is now
medieval face mask out there.
Oh yeah, the old school. Then, yeah, the old school mask. Yeah,
I'm just trying to imagine. I like to imagine that final scene though. Like, as a fan in the stadium, where like he's yelling at the ump. Okay, yeah, I've seen that a million times. Then he hits the ump with a bat, and it's just like, what the? Or he punches him in the face, and it's like, what the hell is going on?
I just want to know.
Stabs him, and then he kills a player.
Yeah. Also,
I just want to know at what point. At what point does Gil? I mean, and you see him walking through the tunnels during the game. But at what point, like during the rain delay, does he like sneak into the umpire's room, where presumably there should be 4 or 5 other people in there, minimum?
They should have shown. I mean, I know they wanted the reveal, but like it would have been cool to see him like getting closer and closer to like the field, and you're just like, oh god, he's going to be part of this shit.
Right. Yeah. Because you don't really. It's sort of like there's no tension to it. It's just sort of like, what the hell's going on here? It's like a monsoon, and like, you know, Wesley Snipes has to hit his home run in this weather, blah blah blah. And it just, yeah, it's a little bit of the tension. It's like just silly. It's just like utterly silly. So the drama is sort of all lost. It's just like, what the hell is this?
This is when it becomes a comedy.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, man, it's crazy.
This would be like, this would totally be like the 15th game that I needed to like win a parlay. And like, I'd be like, this would be like the game where I'd be like, holy shit, I'm going to do it. I'm going to win $6,000 on this parlay. And then like, I see like Bobby Rayburn, my in-game parlay as part of it is like for him to get a home run. And like, I watch him like punch the umpire, stab a guy, get stabbed. Like, I'm just like, what's happening?
So, no, it would be worse. It'd be, you'd have an over under. And like you would get it with that run, but then the game would have, you're like, oh, okay, maybe the top of the ninth they'll get. Then he stabs him, and then it's like, oh no, the game's not going to continue.
Yeah, right. Yeah, suspended. Oh, it's been suspended.
Yeah, game suspended. Right.
Well, the other thing too that I love is that all of those security guards and police officers fly down onto the field. And they just let Gil take his knife to the mound.
Yeah.
To show Bobby his fastball.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And we're still letting this guy do this.
Like it's like no, we just have all of our guns drawn at this guy who's clearly not right. But we're gonna let this play out. Like, let's see how this ends. And he throws the knife, and right as he's about to throw it, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, it gets lit up. Yeah, it gets absolutely
20 bullets to the chest.
Squibbed. Yeah. He's still alive.
But he's still alive enough to give that last little.
He's got to get his line in there. He's got to get his line. A simple thank you would have sufficed.
Yes.
Oh, I was losing it at that point because I was like, this has gone off the rails now. Like,
This would be a hell of a game to go to.
Full on comedy.
Dude, yeah. Can you imagine how much, just having a stub from that game. That would be up there with beer night.
Well, I mean, Darren Rovell would buy one of those stubs because, you know, dude's a chach and wants to have stubs to every game that's ever occurred.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that would be a great, get a ticket stub from that if you could find out that Menendez Brothers Knicks game that they were at for that basketball card. Yeah.
I mean, Steve, we could create a fake shirt for this event. Like you have old Candlestick Park, a ton of rain, a dead umpire on the field, and like a ton of just And it's just like, you just like whatever you want to call it.
Oh man.
Ray Burns Revenge.
Yeah.
That's actually a great idea, man. We've talked about all doing all sorts of shirts. Like the one from Clueless, like save the, oh, whatever. We talked about doing that one for a long time.
Yes. The, oh God, what's their fundraiser? It's, oh God, I'll look it up.
Yeah, I can't remember, but
the Pismo Beach like disaster relief.
Yes, right, exactly. And this one, that's a great idea. Is to like, yeah, of course it would be like some bloodied ump on the field. Yeah, Rayburn's Revenge is really good. It would be fun to do like a Juan Primo shirt, like before he was dead, like something like if you did like a one of those like caricature shirts from the 90s where it was Benicio del Toro that'd be
and
so like
the, good.
And it would be like Primo with like an exclamation point. That yes. Cool. See, there's all sorts of stuff you could do. But like,
oh my God, the Giants should have a Primo bobblehead night.
Dude, there should be they should do like an ump with like a knife and the bot, and like you could press a button and it would like.
They should have the fan that. Night. Yeah. Oh, De Niro throws out the opening pitch and like, yeah. Until you get a bobblehead of one of the three main guys.
Yeah, you get Primo, awesome. Bobby Rayburn, or Gil. You get like a little like diecast thing of his van. That'd be so cool, man. Well, the thing is though, like other teams should embrace it the way the Cleveland does for Major League, where they're just like, yeah, I don't know, I guess this is just part of our history.
Yeah, you know, I think the only team that I can recall that really does is the Cubs.
Do they do Henry Gardner stuff?
I've seen like, or at least like their minor league affiliates have had like Henry Gardner bobbleheads. Like the Twins don't do anything for
the Tigers for love of the game.
Dude, they don't, be so cool.
Not that I'm aware of.
I would.
The Rays would don't do anything with Dennis Quaid and the rookie.
Yeah, I would do like. I would do like a Kevin Costner bobbleheads in like his Tigers uniform.
Dennis Quaid night at the Tropicana.
We just like Dennis Quaid. Yeah. It has nothing to do with that movie. It was just we like it.
He's just in town that week.
Yeah. Oh, was he in a baseball movie?
He was in The Rookie.
Yeah, the Rookie. When he's the teacher.
Oh, yeah, we know.
No, that's what they're saying. Oh, they're like, their PR team doesn't even know. Oh, they're like, oh, he's in a baseball movie? That's cool.
Oh, I guess that lines up great.
Wait, the guy from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? No, his brother.
They accidentally invite Randy Quaid?
Yeah.
He would never, though, because like he knows the Star Whackers are out.
Yeah.
That's why he hides in the woods because he knows he's being hunted.
Hide in the woods. I think he's like I think he even lives in Canada someplace, like up in the woods.
I believe he does. Yeah,
he does.
That's amazing.
You had a really good question here, Fabs. Is Wesley Snipes on the Mount Rushmore of sports movie actors?
All right.
I think that's a great.
He was Willie Mays Hayes. Question.
Yes, exactly.
You know what? Actually, during this movie, I was. So they showed his mantle of all of his hats, too. Mm-hmm. There were like half a dozen hats that looked like they were up there. I think I saw the Yankees and the White Sox and the Braves and at least the Giants. And I thought I saw a few more. What would have really made this kind of even more funny was if instead of Rayburn, the last name was Mays. Hayes.
That'd been great.
So like it was like a subtle nod to like Major League, but not, you know, overtly like, yes, this is the same player, like just years down the road.
Or it's like cool. His brother. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was like, that'd be hilarious if there was some continuity there.
I like that.
But
what else was he in? Sports movie actors. I think Kevin Costner is your A number one, right? Not even a question. Yes. Stallone is another good one. That's a no doubt about it. Then it gets a little dicey after that, I would probably say. and it probably becomes more like personal preference to some extent.
Well, Snipes is in, so he's in this, he's in Major League, he's in White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah.
That's true. So that's a really good point.
He's in a variety, like
Blade's pretty athletic.
Blade's athletic.
He hunts vampires for sport.
Yes. He does.
You're actually probably right. So I would actually probably say you could pencil.
He's up there.
Him
he's
in there.
He's certainly on that short list. Keanu.
Well, let's see. So he did
Hardball.
Hardball. Yeah. Did he do anything else?
Any Given Sunday.
No, Keanu.
He's not in Any Given Sunday.
No, he's in The Replacements.
Replacements. I'm sorry, Replacements. Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, Point Break. He's
yeah.
He's Johnny Utah.
Johnny Utah.
Yeah.
So that's a good point.
That's a really good point. You could make a case for him. Could make a case for like Will Smith at this point.
Oh, that's a yeah.
Because of Ali.
Ali and the King Richard.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
You could make that case.
I was gonna say Emilio Estevez, but that the only thing I'm coming up with was like Mighty Ducks.
So I think you have three for sure. You have Costner, Stallone, and I think Wesley Snipes.
Oh, you know who you could
pretty nicely.
Dude, you know who you could? You could do even Adam Sandler.
I was gonna say Sandler, Happy Gilmore.
And basketball movie that he just did is really friggin' good. You could do that.
Or where he's a scout. Yeah, I like that movie.
Yeah. I got one, but I want to see this next in development movie before I confirm it.
Okay.
Will Ferrell.
There you go.
That's a really funny one.
That could be a good one. That might actually be it.
Because this golf movie that he's supposedly going to do, that's supposed to be kind of like the PGA versus the LIV tour.
Yeah.
And it's got, I've been reading the early vibes and it's supposed to be like Talladega Nights. And I was like, oh God, that was such a great movie.
Actually, you're right. That's gotta be who it is. It's gotta be Will Ferrell. So Costner, Stallone, Snipes and Will Ferrell.
Yeah. Cause Will Ferrell did Talladega Nights.
Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory.
Potentially this.
Kicking and Screaming.
Kicking and Screaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thunder. Or not Tropic Thunder. I'm sorry. Semi-Pro. Where they are the Tropics.
Oh, yeah. Semi-Pro. Good call.
Yeah.
They are the Tropics.
Yes.
So that's what? Four.
He really wanted to be in that Showtime show. Negative. But.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But that was what ended him in McKay's partnership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sucks.
And now Adam McKay makes garbage.
Yep.
And I feel very sad about it.
I do, too.
At least I thought Don't Look Up was bad. But his other stuff was okay. Anyway. Okay.
I have one... Quick, yeah,
get your final thoughts.
One point on three people. So Tony Scott passed up The Rock to film this movie.
I think that's fair. I think it all worked out pretty well.
It did work out. Michael Bay does a great job with The Rock.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see like what The Rock would have been.
It would have been like
in like an alternate universe, like where like if those two switched.
I think we would have gotten a lot of enemy of the state type stuff.
Oh, dude, sure. You know what would be sweet is a Michael Bay sports movie.
Yeah.
I could do that. That would be wild.
Like a Michael Bay baseball movie would be
fucking nuts. It'd be a lot of lens flare, but I'd be okay with it.
I would love it. There'd be explosions on the field.
There would be. Dude, Transformers just popping up out of
shit. He could use his pyro budget for like the halftime show.
Yeah.
Like whatever the halftime performance was.
Dude. I would kill to see that because now that he's doing all this stuff with drones, like he did for Ambulance, I'd be like, I would kill to see him do a sports movie.
I think he would. Really I honestly, like all joking aside, I think he would do a pretty sweet job.
I would agree. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, I think the thing is pretty... that
when Michael Bay doesn't get in his own way, he makes good shit. He makes really, really good stuff. Like when it's not the real big budget stuff, he's
and visually it's always like interesting. Some of it doesn't always land, but like I'll stand by this with the Transformers movies. Like at that time, like that was some good CGI.
It's still good CGI.
He did some stuff.
Really it is.
Like he did some pretty cool stuff really with good. That movie. The movie.
I still think the story's not Transformers. The greatest. I will fight anyone on the third Transformers because I think that one's like actually genuinely a great summer movie.
Which one is that? I can't remember.
That's Dark of the Moon when they fight like when Patrick Dempsey's the villain.
I think I had given up on the franchise. Oh no,
okay, dude. It's great.
Is that when they're in Chicago? In
Chicago. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I recall that one.
Yeah. Yes, Megan really Fox got replaced in that one.
Yes. Yes. That she did.
True. Yes.
I liked the first one a lot too. I thought it was really cool.
And yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
The first one I dug. Yeah. A lot of like more charm to it before it like gets really wild.
Yeah.
And then the third one's just like balls to the wall action for 3 hours. It's great.
Yeah. It's awesome. And then my other quick point was Robert De Niro was coming off the two movies that had been released just prior to The Fan were Heat and Casino.
Jesus, those heater. I can't wait to do Heat.
We should read Heat 2. We should read Heat 2 before we...
we should.
Before we do that. And in Heat 2 is in production, finally. So they
it said, is.
Yeah. After
Casino is really great also, man.
Yeah. I fucking love Casino so much. God, I love it.
God.
Wesley Snipes was not as lucky because, like, New Jack City was 91. White Man Can't Jump was 92. Demolition Man was 94. And, like, it was interspersed with, like, a lot of just kind of...
Like, before he gets the blade?
Before he got the blade. Because that's like the thing I was like, oh, Wesley Snipes is kind of looking a little jacked. Was like, I couldn't remember when the first Blade came out, and then I had to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 2 years prior to that, so.
I'd like to know what the fuck people are doing with Wesley Snipes these days. Like, why are we not putting him in good stuff? What is going on here?
I feel like he should have a resurgence really soon.
What is happening? Like, I don't get it, man. I feel like he got shafted on having to go to prison, but
I you feel want like my hot take Disney yeah. has him on ice
for Blade.
Yeah,
no way.
I think he makes a cameo in Blade.
I don't think he would do it. I think he'd be like, fuck that shit, I'm Blade, and like I'm not passing the torch.
Yeah, I could totally see him doing that though too,
and I would agree with him on that. I think it's
one or the other. Either he's like down with it or he is 100% against it. There is no
Blade movie. That Blade movie might never even happen based on
what there's a good chance.
The movie is supposed to come out a couple of years. It's been pushed so many times.
I thought it was supposed to come out this year.
They haven't even like written it.
No. It's been rewritten like three times.
Yeah,
a 2026 release.
Yeah,
because they keep fucking it up because it's like, all right, well, we already had two that are absolute classics and then they're hard R. So like what do we do with this?
Let's make this PG.
Watch
your mouth on Blade Trinity.
Pixar G. So okay. All right. What Fabs, you have any final thoughts on this?
I mean I just think this movie, because we did Celtic Pride. And it's very fun to watch movies about sports fandom and just the insanity of it. But I think this movie, this movie is super relevant. I think it's just how insane fans are, how they feel entitled to know everything, be part of every athlete's life, especially now with social media. Fans are the worst. I mean, they make the games worth playing. They are the reason sports exists. But this movie, as ridiculous as it is, does have some pieces that like really tap into just how deluded fans are, how much they hold on to just fading glory no matter how small it is, and in a little league championship, you know, 45 years earlier. And it's just, it's really interesting to me. And I would just love to see a remake. I think it'd be so awesome.
This is a movie I could see certainly. I like movies like this that are ripe for remakes where like nobody has any sort of special attachment to it.
No.
Where, you know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah, sure. I totally see a remake of The Fan. Like, why not?
Yeah, you know? No. Fabs, and you brought up earlier too, and Steve, you did too, you guys. Like, with the advent of Twitter and other social media, and like, it's ripe for a remake. Like, I'll give a quick aside. There was a dude I knew in a previous job.
About you?
Not me.
This guy I knew kidnapped someone.
This guy I knew kidnaps. No, no. But this, I mean, guy was a little bit younger than us. Huge Browns fan. You know, I worked with the guy downtown Cleveland. He would drive past a residence that was a lot of players used to live in and would see Johnny Manziel and like U-turned on like busy streets just to like pull up next to him to wave to him. Like Chad Yikes. Johnson was in town, and the kid found this on like Twitter that Chad Johnson was in town to doing something, and rolled up to like a beer and liquor store that sold cigars and picked up some cigars and like went to like the restaurant Chad Johnson was at.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and gave him to him
and like smoked with Chad, like smoked a cigar with Chad Johnson.
And like, That's the story.
That's the end of the story. Like, I was like,
right,
cool. Like, what'd you guys talk about? Oh, well, like he like basically like lit the cigar with me, and like we talked for 5 minutes, and it was like, cool,
awesome.
Like
great,
buddy. Like, and this guy was so amped about like all these stories, and I was just like, you're so freaking weird. Like,
I mean, the thing that sucks is
people
like,
have this like a crazy attachment.
You can't even use those stories to get women. They're just like,
no, it's like,
you did like, what?
Like you can't land a girl with it.
So you're going to do that to me if like I ghost you?
Yeah, when you tell dudes about it, like they think you're weird. Like, it's a lose-lose.
This is why women think sports are ridiculous, because we treat it like this.
Yes.
And like we get really, like men get really upset when that's like called out. When people call out the inherent weirdness of being a sports fan, which like it is, like, don't, you know, it's very strange and silly to like sports that much. But like, you know, men hate it when like it gets called out, when they're like, you did what? You know, you stood outside for, you wanted a grown man to sign your card. And like, I'm one of those people, and I know it's crazy, but like, you know, I don't mind saying it's silly, but like, there are people who take it really seriously.
Yeah, but we've also seen all those people who, like you just said, take it too seriously, who have a binder full of baseball cards that they demand that player signs 20 of them.
Oh, yeah.
When they Especially see them. The and if they don't, then they get pissed off.
Right. They ruin it for everybody else. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like, I'm surprised that there aren't more people like Gil out there that are just like, you don't really hear too much about sports fans like stalking dudes, I guess, like, and getting like that attached. Like, they blow them up on Instagram or Instagram and Twitter, I guess. But like,
I gotta think team security has gotten better too,
probably. Yeah,
yeah,
like, there's like, oh yeah, because there's a scene in this where like Gil fucking calls a clubhouse phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just like give it to him. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll get him for you. And he's like, what? Really?
Okay. Well, and I will say, like, it was probably at that time when things really started shifting. You know, my parents have told me stories like, oh, yeah, you know, like the Browns would hold training camp out by, you know, where my parents live. And, you know, you could go to like a restaurant and like bump into like 10 players.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and like that was like, fly, but that like, was like that was the '80s, like
right.
That was,
they would fly on your Southwest flight,
yeah.
And it's just like, wait, okay, good luck in the series, guys.
Yeah, but like now, in the late '90s, like things definitely started changing. And I feel like that's why a lot of like the stuff that was the one thing I kind of had kept reminding myself when I was watching this movie. It was like, oh yeah, that was like right before things really took a seismic change.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Where it wouldn't be so weird to see Juan Primo at your local sauna.
Yes, exactly.
Your Turkish strip bathhouse. Strip club makes total sense, though. Like, that still holds true today.
Oh,
like,
totally, yeah.
Like, right, you're going to see, right. you might bump into an athlete or two there.
Yeah, understandable. Okay, all right, cool. Yeah, no, my last thoughts on this as we wrap it up is that this movie, I would not classify this as good, but it's got some interesting things. Like, De Niro's cool in it. I think it's always fun to see him play a little, like, unhinged, but not in like a cool way. So, like, you know, real psycho stuff.
It was fun. Yeah,
I like that. Aside from that, like, that's pretty much like the draw to this is that you see De Niro doing some interesting work. And if you're like a Tony Scott completist, then like you're in a good spot to watch this. But like, if you're a baseball fan, you're like, well, it's a baseball movie, I should watch it. Like, no. Don't do it. Don't go into it thinking you're about to watch it.
No.
You'll be so, your head will be spinning so fast 10 minutes in that you won't be able to correct yourself and you might be permanently scarred. So don't think this is a baseball movie in the classic sense. But other than that, it's a good enough time. It's on Hulu, yeah. Like we were saying earlier. So, you know, check it out. It's definitely worth a watch. So, with that being said, that wraps up this episode. Chris, thanks for hopping on. We'll get you on next for, what is it? The Scout or Ed?
I can't wait. And I appreciate you guys having me come on.
Baseball here.
Always love it.
Rookie of the year, clearly, obviously.
Yes.
So there's plenty. But other than that, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Tell us what you think about the fan or... about, I don't know, whatever. If you want to harass us and, you know, stalk us, I guess that's fine too. You know where to find us. Other than that, we'll catch you guys later.